It's time to get spooky. Welcome to the show. Let's go.
Drum roll. Hello, and welcome back to the Spooky Scary Podcast. My name is Kat.
And my name is Chris.
It has been a minute.
It's been more than a minute. It's been a couple months now, hasn't it?
It's been many minutes.
It's been at least two.
I think our last episode was in April.
It was.
And then my brain shut down, so we stopped.
And then I moved, and that was a whole nightmare and a half. And
yes, Chris moved. I work in a school, so we had like finals and testing, and I just was like not having fun.
Yeah, so. I don't have the excuse of working in a school. These last few months have just been a nightmare, and I haven't had the time, energy, or mental capacity to record a podcast, so I've just not.
Well, in your defense, the last few months you have been going to a job. The last few months I have been on, well, the last month, I've been on summer, so I've been lying in bed watching Shameless, being like, I am too lazy to even move my body, let alone set up a microphone.
That's fair. But we're back. We
are.
We have a few changes to how we're going to do things to help accommodate the fact that the weekly episodes were just getting a little bit too much for us, and we don't want to keep disappearing out of the blue for a few months at a time.
Yeah, I think trying to do weekly episodes has repeatedly made us like we stick with it for a while and then we just get overwhelmed and kind of burn out. So we've decided we're going to do bi-weekly episodes, as in every other week.
Still plenty of spooky and scary for your month, but just a little bit less work for us until
just
we can
pull them back a little bit. But hopefully that means we won't go, like, 4 months without uploading and then just be like, hey.
We're back.
Although that's what we're doing right the fuck now.
Yeah. Thankfully this time was a little bit less of a break, but it was a needed break.
Yes. So do you want to just, like, jump right into our spooky and scary stories?
Yeah. Mine is a really, really long one, but I wanted to do a heavy hitter to come back with.
Yeah. Gotta come back with something that like makes waves.
Oh yeah, this one'll make some waves, all right.
Not in a positive sense.
Oh,
but
not a single positive wave was made with the Green River Killer. Not a single one.
I've heard that name before.
Let's jump right on into him, shall we?
We shall.
Gary Leon Ridgway was born February 18th, 1949, in Salt Lake City, Utah. He was born to Mary and Thomas Ridgway. Bless me. He had two brothers. His home life was described as somewhat troubled.
They always are, aren't they?
Yeah. Relatives described his mother as domineering and said that even when he was young, he witnessed more than one violent argument between his parents.
For a second, I thought you were going to be like, relatives described his mom as a dominatrix.
No, not that.
And I was like, yes, that makes sense. Although we did do a story once about a serial killer whose mom was a dominatrix.
We did.
Do you remember that one?
Wasn't her name Ellen?
It was Mary Bell.
Oh. I was close.
You knew it was a girl.
I did. That's all I knew.
Yeah.
His father was a bus driver who complained often about the presence of sex workers on his bus.
That would have been awkward if his mom was a dominatrix then.
Yeah, probably. I think it would probably be a little bit of conflict of interest.
Yeah.
Well, not interest, but disinterest.
It could be. Yeah, his interest in his dominatrix wife and his hatred of sex workers.
Yeah.
That's what caused the arguments, actually.
He hated how she brought money home and hated what put food on the table.
Yeah.
But he didn't work. Well, he was a bus driver, but turns out he did it for free. He just found a bus and
you're just like writing fan fiction now.
He just found a bus while the bus driver was like on break.
You find a bus and then you just start driving the bus routes.
Yeah.
Like, no one is paying you to do this, sir. You're just...
The keys were just in the ignition. And he was like, I got a few hours to kill. Might as well.
Seems fun.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. That sounds horrible.
Depending on what your hobbies are.
I just
found this whole TikTok, you know, the like van life people. I'm sorry, I know you have so many notes and I'm already going on tangents.
No, I appreciate it. I've missed our tangents.
That's the show, baby. So I found this whole TikTok that was like this girl who's like a van life person, and she has a bus, and her and her sister like renovated this whole bus. And they drive around the country, like, picking up hitchhikers. So they just have, like, this caravan of all these, like, people that they picked up. And they're, like, they call them their little, like, bus family. And, like, there was videos of them just, like, juggling fire and stuff. And I was like, this sounds sick, but also like a horror movie a little bit.
That's a really, really easy way to get murdered.
I do, too. But I also wonder if, like, the fact that we talk about murder so often, like, makes us think that it's more common than it is.
Fair.
Because part of me was like, you guys are gonna get murdered, aw. And then the other part of me was like, actually, that looks dope. I kind of want to live in a little like roaming coven. I was gonna say caravan, but then my brain was like, coven.
Everything is Twilight.
Yeah.
I actually knew a girl in high school who, after high school, became a van girl and like renovated a van, and I think with her boyfriend at the time they traveled in a van. I don't think they're together anymore, and I don't know if she still does it. Literally haven't talked to her in like years, but hope she's doing well.
Me too. Go you.
Go Amanda. Hope your van's doing well if you still have it. Oh, I doubt you listen to this podcast,
she
but if
do,
you
like,
do
a Vanda or something.
A Vanda. Oh my god.
She could be like a van life influencer.
I think she did have a van like Facebook page at one point, or Instagram or something.
She needs to get on TikTok.
Oh my god. I hope she still has life. Her van like social media going strong. Again, like I said, I literally forgot she existed for a while. Because like we weren't like super close. We were in chorus together for like 4 months.
No, I have a lot of people who I went to high school with who I, like, just tangentially knew who they were, and now I'm, like, still friends with them on, like, Facebook, and I follow them on Instagram, and I'm just like, I don't know you, but...
Glad to see your life is going all right.
Yeah.
Or the opposite
good job,
of all right.
Random person. Yeah, some people you just stay following because their life is kind of a train wreck, and you're like, I'm gonna grab my popcorn.
It's like, I subscribed to this train wreck, and now I gotta see where it's going.
Exactly. Speaking of train wrecks...
Let's get back on this one. Gary had a bedwetting problem until he was 13, and after each time, his mother would wash his genitals.
What a sentence to bring us back in. Okay.
He later told defense psychologists that as an adolescent, he had conflicting feelings of anger and sexual attraction towards his mother and fantasized about killing her.
Is that the Oedipus complex?
Probably.
Didn't Oedipus kill his mom?
I don't know.
Or did he just blind himself because he was like, my...
Did he blind
lustful
himself?
Eyes. Maybe I'm mixing up all of my fucking stories. I thought Oedipus, like, wanted to fuck his mom, but then he found out it was his mom, so he blinded himself. Maybe we'll do an episode on, like, Greek myths or something.
That could be a fun time. I used to be really, really obsessed with Greek myths as a kid.
Me too, during my Percy Jackson phase.
Yeah, very that. And then it was, like, Roman, and then all of them.
Yes. I was very into Norse ones.
Yeah.
That was my moment. So he wants to fuck his mom.
He wants to fuck and kill his mother. He's also dyslexic and was held back a year in high school. This made him a little angry, so he had some anger issues.
Yes, I would say wanting to kill your mom is indicative of that.
Yeah, but it gets not much better.
Yeah, I figured.
When he was 16 years old, he stabbed a 6-year-old boy.
Oh my god.
He led this boy into the woods and stabbed him through the ribs into the liver, but he survived the attack.
Well, that's good. I'm glad he survived.
Yes. That's the one highlight.
I thought
of the
normally
story.
They started with like birds or something, but he
no,
really
he
just
started
went
with a 6-year-old boy
to a human person. I mean, not that like abusing animals is like okay, but I would prefer you do none of it actually.
Yeah, I think I would also prefer none of them if that's the option.
Yeah,
I
if
would
that's
prefer
on the
none of them.
table.
If
Just like
like
make a voodoo doll or something. I don't know. Find a way to like help,
punch your
like get
stuffed
out.
animal, maybe.
Yeah, join a kickboxing class. I don't know.
Taekwondo.
There are options. You don't have to kill people.
He graduated from high school finally in 1969 and married his 19-year-old high school girlfriend, Claudia Craig. He then joined the Navy and was sent to Vietnam, where he served on a board supply ship. No, on board a supply ship.
I was like, all they do is supply boards? Interesting.
Yeah, that's all he did. And
Someone's got to do it.
he also saw combat. During his time in the military, he had frequent encounters with sex workers and contracted gonorrhea.
Oh my God.
Even though he was angered by this, he decided that there was nothing he needed to change in his activities and continued to have sex without protection.
If you don't wear a condom, that's on you. Don't be mad about it.
Right? Like, also, maybe don't cheat on your wife while you're fighting a war in Vietnam, but.
Well, that as well.
And needless to say, the marriage ended within a year.
As, yes, that makes sense. Good on Claudia. She said, I'm not putting up with that.
Yeah.
Some people just put up with it. Especially in like the early 70s.
Oh, yeah, especially like.
And you know what, Claudia? You dodged a goddamn bullet.
Truly, because his second wife, Miss Marcia Winslow, claimed that he had once placed her in a chokehold.
Jesus.
But during his second marriage, he became religious and would proselytize door to door, reading the Bible aloud at work and home, and insisted that his wife follow the strict teachings of their pastor.
Okay.
He would also frequently cry after sermons or after reading the Bible.
Is it from guilt?
Probably. Because
I
he would
hope so.
continue to solicit the services of sex workers and wanted his wife to participate in sex in public and inappropriate places, sometimes
Oh.
even in areas where his victims' bodies were later discovered.
Oh my God, so like he a freak.
Yeah.
I mean, we knew that. He wanted to fuck his mom. Okay. Every time I'm like, wow, this guy's weird, I just go back to that.
According to women in his life, he had an insatiable sexual appetite. His three ex-wives and several ex-girlfriends reported that he demanded sex from them several times a day. Multiple times would be in public areas or in the woods. And he had a fixation with sex workers, and it was another love-hate relationship, likely stemming from the fixation his father had on them.
Yeah.
He would complain about their presence in his neighborhood, but take advantage of their services weekly.
Well, supply and demand, bitch. Like,
You can't complain about them being there if you're literally the reason they're there because you're paying their bills, man.
exactly. They're like, this is a good place to work. We
They'll
got.
stop coming if you stop paying them.
Yeah. Man's never took an economics class.
That's all it is. With his second wife, he had a son named Matthew, who was born in 1975.
Ugh, poor Matthew.
However, that didn't do much to matter because throughout the 1980s and 1990s, Gary Ridgway is believed to have murdered at least 71 teenage girls and women near Seattle and Tacoma, Washington.
Oh no.
In later court statements, he reported that he had killed so many that he lost count, with the majority of the murders occurring between 1982 and 1984. Majority of the victims were believed
That's
to.
two fucking years, bro.
Yeah. Majority of the victims were either believed to be sex workers or runaways whom he picked up along Pacific Highway South.
That's like over one a week, right?
Yeah.
No. Well,
I
it's about
mean,
one a week.
I. Th yeah, I think so. That math sounds right.
I think there's 52. You know what? I've never been a math person, so maybe I'll just shut up. But I think there's 52 weeks in a year, about something like that. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry. Which means there's like 104 in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he killed about at least 71 people. So yeah, that's about one a week.
That's insane.
For 2 years. Fucked up.
He sometimes showed women pictures of his son to trick them into trusting him. They would engage in sexual activity, and after minutes of intercourse from behind, he would wrap his forearm around the front of their necks and use the other arm to pull back as tightly as he could, strangling them.
Jesus.
He killed most victims in his home, his truck, or a secluded area, and then dumped their bodies in a wooded area around the Green River, Seattle-Tacoma International Airport, or other dump sites within South King County.
So that's why he's the Green River killer?
Yes.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to get on my soapbox for a second.
Get on your soapbox, please.
I feel like people are always, like, shitting on sex workers and, like, victim blaming for, like, dangerous situations. And I'm like, being a sex worker can be dangerous because there's not really, like, for the most part, like, there's not really, like, a trace of, you know, like, where you're going or, like, who you're with. But it's, like, if sex work is more normalized, then that won't be as much of a thing, you know? Like, crazy, just a concept. Yeah, that's all I had to say. I feel like there's just a lot of victim blaming when people are, like, oh, well, he was just killing sex workers or whatever. And it's, like, like human fucking beings, maybe,
perhaps
he's just like purposefully going after people who, like, he knows that it'll be harder to, like, track down, or like maybe people won't as often notice that they're missing, like basically just attacking vulnerable people.
And it's so frustrating because, like, the fact that he was able to kill 71 fucking people over the span of this time, just because of the fact that they are a vulnerable population.
Yeah, and sex workers, I don't know the exact percentages, but they are likely to be, like, neurodivergent or have some sort of disability or mental illness or, like, obviously have been from, like, a situation of poverty. They might not have, like, family or support structures. So, like, the most vulnerable people you can find.
Exactly.
Not all the time. Not being like, all sex workers are vulnerable. But, like, especially in the 70s, 80s, when, like, it's sex work, not, like, posting pictures on OnlyFans. It's sex work, like, getting into a truck with a strange, scary man. Anyway, that's my soapbox for the day.
There were also two confirmed and other two suspected victims found in Portland, Oregon. The bodies were often left in clusters and were posed sometimes, usually nude. He would sometimes return to the victims' bodies and have sexual intercourse with them again. He explained later that he did not find necrophilia more sexually satisfying, but having sex with the deceased reduced his need to obtain another living victim and limited his exposure to being caught. Because most
that doesn't
of the...
make it better.
No, it doesn't. Because most of
he's
the
like,
bodies.
He's like, well, I wasn't attracted to the dead bodies. I
was
just did
doing
what I
it because it was
do.
Easier.
And it's like, you're not helping your case, my guy.
Because most of the bodies were not discovered until only the skeletons remain, two victims are still unidentified.
That's so sad.
I know. He occasionally contaminated the dump sites with gum, cigarettes, and written materials belonging to others, and even transported a few victims' remains across state lines into Oregon to confuse the police. In the early 1980s, the Kings County Sheriff's Office formed the Green River Task Force to investigate the murders. Task Force members included Robert Keppel and David Reichert, who periodically interviewed incarcerated serial killer Ted Bundy in 1984. Bundy offered his opinions on the psychology, motivations, and behavior of the killer. He suggested that the killer was revisiting the dump site to have sex with the victims, which obviously turned out to be true, and that if the police were to happen upon a fresh grave, they should stake it out and wait for him to come back.
The idea of, like, I understand why, because maybe, like, you want to, like, get into the head of somebody, but the idea of, like, going to a serial killer and being like, hey, what are your thoughts on this shit? It's just, like, funny to me.
Right. John E. Douglas also contributed to the investigation a little bit. He developed a profile of the suspect.
Criminal minds, let's go.
Gary Ridgway was arrested in 1982 and 2001 on charges related to prostitution. He became a suspect in the Green River killings in 1983, but in 1984 he passed a polygraph test.
Oh, those bitches are fake.
On April 7th, 1987, police took hair and saliva samples from him. Around 1985, going back in time a little bit, because he starts dating Judith Mawson, who eventually will become his third wife. They marry in 1988. Judith said that whenever she moved into the house when they were dating, that there was no carpet in the house. Detectives later told her that he had probably wrapped a body up in the carpet.
Oh my God. And that's why. Did you ever watch the Ted Bundy movie that was, like, extremely wicked and whatever the fuck? The title is hard to say.
Yes, it is. It's very long.
It's a lot of adjectives.
Very, very many.
But I like that one focuses on Ted Bundy's wife rather than, like, mostly focusing on Ted Bundy. Because I feel like a lot of people, like, obviously, like, the victims are, like, the actual victims. Mm-hmm. But imagine being married to somebody and, like, you, like, maybe you have your problems. Maybe you're like, oh, they're a little weird. But, like, obviously you love them. You're married to them. And then you find out they're, like, a fucking prolific serial killer.
Right.
That must, like, just, like, melt your fucking brain. Anyway.
So Judith claimed that she had not suspected Gary at all of any of the crimes before she was contacted by authorities in 1987. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, they had been dating for 2 years at this point. She had not even heard of the Green River Killer before that time because she did not watch the news. But the samples collected in 1987 were later subjected to DNA profiling, providing the evidence for his arrest warrant. And on November 30th, 2001, Gary was at the Kenworth Truck Factory where he worked as a spray painter when police arrived to arrest him. Gary was arrested on suspicion of murdering four women nearly 20 years earlier after being first identified as a potential suspect. When DNA evidence conclusively linked semen left in the victims to the saliva swab taken by the police. The four victims named in the original indictment were Marcia Chapman, Opal Mills, Cynthia Hines, and Carol Ann Christensen. Three more victims, Wendy Caulfield, Deborah Bonner, and Deborah Estes, were added to the indictment after a forensic scientist identified microscopic spray paint spheres as a specific brand and composition of paint used at the Kenworth factory during the specific time frame where these victims were killed.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. So they were like, you fucking did all of this and we're gonna prove it.
Yeah. I love DNA.
I do.
Like, that sounds like such a stupid sentence, but, like, whenever we've done murders that, like, were, like, way in the past and shit, like, when we did,
Golden State Killer.
Yeah, or, like, even, like, fucking Jack the Ripper. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, they just, like, get to a fucking body and, like, it could have, like, the killer's DNA all over it and they'd just be like, does anybody see any clues around here?
Get your magnifying glass out. You see any spit?
Let's look for some shoe prints or something. I don't know.
Early in August 2003, Seattle Television News reported that Gary had been moved from a maximum security cell at King County Jail to an Airway Heights minimum medium security level tank. I don't know what most of those words mean, to be honest with you.
He's in a tank.
Yeah, they just put him in, like, a literal fucking combat tank, and they were like...
So he went from high security to medium security?
A minimum medium security.
Minimum medium security. Yeah. Okay, so they were like, he's not going to fight anybody, mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Yeah. Other news reports stated that his lawyers, led by Anthony Savage, were closing a plea bargain that would spare him the death penalty in return for his confession to a number of the Green River murders. On November 5th, 2003, Gary entered a guilty plea to 48 charges of aggravated first-degree murder as a part of a plea bargain agreed to in June that would spare him execution in exchange for his cooperation in locating the remains of his victims and providing other details.
Yeah, I feel like that point, it's like, listen, they got you, man. Just, like, tell them what they want to know.
Right. In his statement accompanying his guilty plea, he explained that he had killed all of his victims inside King County, Washington, and that he had transported and dumped the remains of the two women near Portland to confuse the police. Deputy Prosecutor Jeffrey Baird noted that in court that the deal contained the names of 41 victims who would not be the subject of State v. Ridgeway if it were not for the plea agreement. Damn. King County Prosecuting Attorney Norm Malling explained his decision to make the deal. We could have gone forward with 7 counts, but that is all we could have ever hoped to solve. At the end of that trial, whatever the outcome, there would have been lingering doubts about the rest of these crimes. This agreement was the avenue to the truth, and in the end, the search for the truth is still why we have a criminal justice system. Gary Ridgeway does not deserve our mercy. He does not deserve to live. The mercy provided by today's resolution is not directed at Ridgeway, but towards the families who have suffered so much.
Yeah, I feel like at the end of the day, it's like it's probably more important for families to get answers than it is for, like, this dude to die or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Like, 41 people are missing, and it, like, turns out later on, 71 people.
Yeah.
Like, those families would rather have the closure than you just be able to charge him for at most 7 people.
Yeah, when he fucking killed, like, so many more than that.
On December 18th, 2003, King County Superior Court Judge Richard Jones sentenced Gary Ridgeway to 48 life sentences with no possibility of parole and 1 life sentence to be served consecutively. He was also sentenced to an additional 10 years for tampering with evidence for each of the 48 victims, adding 480 years to his 48 life sentences.
I love shit like that. I know it's just like for whatever, like, clerical reasons, but mm-hmm. the idea that you can have 48 life sentences plus 480 years, it just reads like they're like, okay, just in case this motherfucker is immortal, we've got him.
He's never getting out. Just in case he happens to get bit by a vampire at some point. Let the record reflect.
His vampire body needs to stay here for at least 48 lifetimes. How much is a lifetime? Who's to say?
Let the next judge decide.
Yeah. The next 48. Because.
And then 480 years after that, don't forget.
Yeah.
Gary Ridgeway led prosecutors to 3 bodies in 2003. On August 16th of that year, the remains of a 16-year-old girl were found near Unumclaw, Washington.
I watched your face be like, this is a word.
I realized I should have found the pronunciation for that beforehand. I remember typing this being like, boy, you better look this up. He did not look this up. 40 feet.
Sorry if you live there.
Sorry, yeah. I doubt y'all do because we still a baby podcast, so if you do, email us and tell us how to pronounce your name. 40 feet from
SpookyScaryPodcasts@gmail.com.
That's not our email.
It's not.
SpookyPodcasts@gmail.com because I'm an idiot and Spooky Scary Podcast was taken for some reason.
Who the fuck has that?
I don't know.
As their email.
If you have it, can we have it, please? I don't know how that we would go about taking it from you, but can we have it? Pretty please? You can't tell, but I'm smiling at you.
Okay, so what happened to this bitch?
She was, the remains were pronounced as belonging to...
Oh my god, I meant this bitch as in the murderer, not as in the victim.
I
just called the victim a bitch.
I figured as much. However, these remains were belonging to Pammy Annette Event, who had believed to be a victim of the Green River Killer. The remains of Marie Malvar and April Buttram were found in September 2003. On November 23, 2005, the Associated Press reported that a weekend hiker found the skull of one of the 48 women. The skull, her name was Tracy Winston, who was 19 when she disappeared from Northgate Mall on September 12, 1983. And this was in Seattle, or southwest of Seattle, sorry.
But in Washington.
Yeah. In his confession, he acknowledged that he targeted sex workers because they were easy to pick up and that he hated most of them. He confessed that he had sex with the victims' bodies after he murdered them, but claimed he began burying the later victims so that he could resist the urge to commit necrophilia.
Okay, so he made this whole thing where he was like, oh, I don't do it because I like it. I just do it because it's easy. But he's going to bury them so that he doesn't do it.
Mm-hmm. And later mm-hmm. he says that murdering young women was his career.
Ew.
Mm-hmm. And now he is currently serving out his 48 consecutive life sentences with 480 extra years added on top in Walla Walla. Oh, no, he got moved from Walla Walla to high-security federal prison in Florence, Colorado.
I wonder what he did to get moved from minimum security to high security.
He was transferred
because... Maybe it was just, like, the more people he admitted to killing, they were like, okay, we gotta lock this guy up. After
public outcry and discussions with the governor, corrections secretary announced that he would be transferred back to Washington to be easily accessible for open murder investigations.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Oh, nope, sorry. He was returned to Washington State Penitentiary.
Okay.
So he is currently in Washington State Penitentiary. So now...
And he'll be there for 1,000 years.
Yes. And now the worst part. We will be... going through a list of his victims because I feel like they deserve to be mentioned because they are the more important people. Part of the story instead of him. Yeah. So first I will list off the 48 confirmed victims. Wendy Lee Caulfield was 16. She disappeared July 18th, 1982. Her body was discovered July 15th, 1982. Giselle Ann Laverne was 17. Her body was, or she was, she disappeared July 17th, 1982 and was found September 25th, 1982. Deborah Lynn Bonner was 23. I'm gonna just do names and ages. I feel like that's gonna save time because there's a lot. Marcia Faye Chapman was 31. Cynthia Jean Hines was 17. Opal Mills was 16. Terry Ray Milligan was 16.
Oh my god, it's like all kids.
Mm-hmm. Like, it was runaways and sex workers, so it was like mm-hmm. young people.
Yeah.
Mary Meehan was 18. Deborah Estes was 15. Linda Rule was 16. Denise Bush was 23. Shonda Summers was 16. Shirley Sherrill was 18. Becky Marrero was 20. Colleen Brockman was 15. Sandra Major was 20. Wendy Steffens was 14. Alma Smith was 18. Dolores Williams was 17. Gail Matthews was 23. Andrea Childers was 19. Sandra Gabbert was 17. Kimmy Kai was 16. Marie Malvar was 18, and Carol Christensen was 21. Oh my god, there's more. That was only 25. I thought I was done. Martina Authorly was 18. Cheryl Wims was 18. Shelley Antosh was 19. Carrie Rois was 15. Constance was 19. Kelly Ware was 22. Tina Thompson was 21. April Buttram was 16. Debbie Abernathy was 26. Tracy Winston was 19. Mary Feeney was 19. Mary Bella was 25. Pammy Event was 15. Delise Plager was 22. Kimberly Nelson was 21. Lisa Yates was 19. Mary West was 16. Cindy Smith was 17. Patricia Barczak was 19. Roberta Hayes was 21. Marta Reeves was 36. Patricia Yellow Robe was 38. And there are two unidentified females, one of them being white and one of them being a woman of color, who one was 14 to 18 and one was 13 to 24. But they were never identified.
Oh, I wish there was a way for them to figure out who they were.
There are a few victims on the task force list that Gary Ridgway is suspected of, but not charged with murdering. There are six victims that they believe that he killed, but
just don't have, like, the evidence or whatever.
Amina Agashev, Gary Ridgway denies killing. She does not fit the profile of any of the victims of the Green River Killer, considering her age, and she was not a sex worker or a teenage runaway. She was 35. She disappeared July 17th, 1982, and her body was found April 18th, 1984. Mm-hmm. Casey Ann Lee. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just thinking this maybe is like me just being like too, like, kind of like it, like I'm in a movie, but I'm like, well, I'm wondering if there were people who, like, they were, if he was this prolific of a serial killer at the time he was, like, being mentioned on the news and stuff, there were probably people who, like, if they killed someone, they tried to, like, make it seem like it might have been,
like, copycats.
Yeah, or maybe not even copycats, but just, like, covering their trail by, like, trying to make it seem like, oh, this guy did it. Look, it's similar.
Right. It wasn't me, it was him.
Yeah.
Although he was never charged with her murder during police interrogations in 2003, Gary did confess to killing Casey Ann Lee. He stated that he strangled her in 1982 and had left her body near a drive-in theater off of SeaTac Strip. Law enforcement officials had never been able to locate her remains at the dump site that he indicated, so he has not been charged. Kelly McGinnis was 18. She disappeared June 28, 1983. Evidence exists to suggest that Gary murdered her. Shortly before her disappearance, she was questioned by a Port of Seattle police officer while dating Gary. He also led authorities to the bodies of several of his victims. One of the bodies was identified as April Buttram, but he identified her initially as Kelly McGinnis.
Okay.
But he says that he often confused them because they looked very similar.
So he's saying that he killed her, but they couldn't find her body?
No. They believe that he killed her because she's missing. They've never found her body.
Okay.
He is also a suspect in Angela Marie Gardner's death. She was 16 when she disappeared in July 1983. Her body was discovered in April 22nd, 1985. Their bodies were discovered a mile from where two of his known victims were. But they're like, well, maybe. He's also a suspected killer in a few other murders, but hasn't been charged in these.
Mm-hmm. I do feel like, well, I don't know. I guess it's important to, like, know what happened to people, but I guess in terms of, like, charging him for stuff, it's like, well, he's already in jail for, like, 10 million years.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's also kind of like, it would be good to know, like,
who
what
did
happened
it?
To these people.
Closure. Closure yeah. would be nice. The first being an unidentified black female, possibly bearing the first name Michelle. It's unknown how old she was. She disappeared sometime in December of 1980, but her body has never been found. So it's kind of iffy because her body's never been found. It's possible her first name was Michelle, but there's very little info about her, so who knows?
How do they know if she's missing if right? they don't know her name?
Because I guess someone at one point reported someone as, like, disappeared.
mm-hmm.
or missing, but...
That they were just like, my friend Michelle's missing, I know nothing else about her.
Yeah, pretty much. She's a black female.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe someone was like, my coworker Michelle didn't show up at work today. That's all I know about her.
You're like, last name, I don't know. And her name's Michelle, I think.
Possibly. Christy Lynn Vorak was 13. She disappeared October 31st, 1982, but her body has never been found. Patricia Ann LeBlanc was 15 when she disappeared on October 12th, 1983. Her body has never been found. Rose Marie Curran was 16 when she disappeared on August 26, 1987. He was the long suspect for her murder, but very recently he was ruled out a suspect. So, Darcy Wade was 16 when she disappeared April 24th, 1990, but her body has not been discovered. Cora McGurk was 22 when she disappeared July 12th, 1991, and her body has not been discovered.
It must be so, like, just, like, I mean, it must be hard, obviously, anyway, to know that, like, a loved one was murdered. But for them to just, like, go missing and to be, like, have no idea what happened.
And now for it to be, like, 30 years later and still have no answers, no body, no nothing.
Yeah, like, they just, like, disappeared. That must be, like, really hard to wrap your brain around.
Right, because, like, for all you know, they could fully just be out there somewhere.
Yeah, and you just, like, don't know. Like, you're like, are they dead? Are they, what if they just, like, decided to leave and, like, start over? But what if they were kidnapped? Like, mm-hmm. you don't have any idea.
Because, like, this one person was 22.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she could have just left, you know? That is a very mm-hmm. small, that is a possibility. Maybe she decided, well, I need to start over and just not tell anybody.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, it's a minute possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Obvious.
It's like, you don't know their home life. Like, maybe they had a rough home life.
Exactly.
And they were just like, bye.
They were like, maybe I can't tell anyone. I have to just leave.
Yeah. Or maybe they're, like, in someone's basement. Or maybe they, like, you don't know.
Oh, hold on. Sorry. Cora McGurk was the mother of NBA player Martell Webster. She disappeared when her son was 4 years old.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
I forgot I put that down there to say. That is the horrifying, horrible story of the Green River Killer.
Fuck that man's.
What a story to come back to.
Yeah, so he's just, like, in Washington now?
Yeah, he's... Bella can go visit him. Little lesser known fact, this is actually the man in Midnight Sun that Carlisle and Edward turn in. And that's actually how they catch him.
I want to read Midnight Sun again. It's literally been like 6 months and I'm like, well, maybe I need to like read it again.
Every time I read Midnight Sun, my brain is just like, all right, now it's time for you to forget every single thing that you just read.
Same. I want to read New Moon from Edward's perspective because like it would be a completely different book. From
oh,
New
it'd
Moon
be 100% of a different book.
There.
Because like,
although I guess
it
would just
different.
Be him like
moping
in the corner crying like for
it would just be him in Italy crying.
Honestly, I'd read that book.
Yeah, I mean Midnight Sun was a lot of him moping and I still have read it like 5 times, so I
yeah,
don't know
Edward
why
is
I'm
like
complaining.
Such a I like how people are like Edward's a stoic bad boy and it's like
no he's not
he's
literally
though.
A mopey
he's,
little bitch.
He's literally the definition of a sad boy.
Yeah, literally all he does is whines and cries about Bella 24/7.
He's like, oh, I can't be with her because I'm dangerous, because I'm not good for her, but oh, my dick is hard. Like,
literally, like, shut the fuck up. I love how we went from, like, serial killer to Twilight in 2.7 seconds.
I think anytime my brain is like, I don't want to be having this conversation. Talk about Twilight instead.
Yeah, no, honestly, whenever I don't know what to talk about, my brain's like, you know what you should talk about instead? Twilight. You know, it's
I have
it's
a lot of
go-to.
Thoughts about it. I have an unending well of thoughts about Twilight.
Oh, same.
Which is good, because it means that we can always have a conversation about it.
I feel like at any given moment, we are just ready to have a conversation about Twilight, but it's not us just regurgitating new, like old thoughts about Twilight. It's just a new mm-hmm. and constant stream conversation. Like, it's new
yes.
thoughts.
And, like, old thoughts may get brought in.
But they're updated sometimes.
Yes.
At least they're sometimes.
They're like, actually, I have updated my thesis, and there are new footnotes.
New footnotes, exactly.
Like, let's discuss.
I most of this didn't change, but there is a... I've respelled some words.
I've discovered something. I've unlocked a higher level of thinking about Twilight. Do we still take breaks? Are we gonna... Should we do that?
Well, we... We don't have ads anymore right now.
You're right. Anchor was bought by Spotify and now is like, you don't deserve to make money. Sure, we didn't really make money before, but at least we had the illusion to keep us alive.
Yeah. I mean, we got like 5 cents an episode, but it made me feel like we got money.
Yeah. At least I could watch the number go up.
Speaking of numbers go up, I would just like to talk about the fact that we have been gone for 2 months, and every single time I checked Anchor, the plays on our last episode were still increasing.
I know, it made me so happy, and I just checked Anchor recently, and I would like to say hello to our 4% Canadian audience. You guys weren't here before.
You were not. I didn't think we had any Canadian audience.
We do. We have a 4% Canadian audience, well, which like doesn't seem like a lot, but like it used to be United States was like 99.9% of our audience.
And how are things with socialized medicine?
Oh my God, don't even get me fucking started again.
How is it to not have a $2,000 health bill? Just for all of your tests to come back normal and then tell you they don't know what's wrong with you.
Yeah, how is it to go I'm like infuriated because I went to the doctor and I literally... You know how sometimes you go to the doctor and, like, you know what the fuck is wrong with you and you know what you need to fix it, but I still have to go to a doctor and spend $300 for them to agree with me and, like, write a little note for the fucking pharmacist to give me what the fuck I need? And it's like, bitch, I knew what I needed.
My favorite part is whenever they tell you, no, you're wrong, pay me $400, and then won't give me what I need. And then so I have to go back 2 days later when it's 10 times worse. And then get what I need originally.
I wish to not live in this hell.
This healthscape.
This healthscape, yes. Ooh, good one.
Thanks, I try my best.
So, should we skip our break?
I think we should, you know? I mean, we can just plow right through.
Well, so I figured since this is our comeback episode, we are the Spooky Scary Podcast. You kind of covered scary.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna take us on a spooky... adventure.
I would love nothing more.
A little less sad, a little more haunted.
I love a good haunted. We haven't had a paranormal moment in a while, and I'm feeling it.
I think my issue with the paranormal stories is because there's usually less details, because a lot of it is like legend says, you know? So
whenever I do research for a paranormal story, it's like I've filled a page and a half and I've looked at like 15 different web pages. And
yeah,
this
but then when you do a serial killer, it's like I have not even started the story and I am 10 pages in.
I've done like 15 seconds of research and I have 15 pages of notes.
Yes. So I was like, you can do a serial killer story and then... I don't have as much pressure on me to have a lot to say.
Fair.
But I actually did kind of... I have like 3 pages of notes.
Hell yeah.
Which is good for a haunting. But the place that I have chosen is like aggressively haunted.
I love an aggressive haunting.
Yes. So I am going to tell you about the ghosts of the Queen Mary. Which...
Beautiful. I'm so excited.
Yes. So the Queen Mary... the RMS Queen Mary is her official name. I feel so weird calling boats she and her, but I know you're supposed to, but, like, it's an inanimate goddamn object. You know?
As I fully sit there and, like, talking to my plants, I'm like, oh, look at her. She's so pretty.
They are not inanimate.
I guess that's fair.
They are alive.
They're alive. Me not fully not understanding the definition of inanimate.
I mean... They're not sentient.
I guess that's fair.
Who's to say, though? I have never been in the brain of a plant. Maybe they are sentient.
I mean, that one book that Stephanie Meyer wrote after Twilight, she tried to theorize that plants were sentient on other planets, so...
I never read that one.
Listen, it was the only book I was allowed to have in No, it was the only book I was allowed to have when I was in the mental hospital, so I read it like 5 times
Fair enough.
A 2 week period.
That seems like an unfortunate book for that location.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a great time. I mean, don't get me wrong, it got me through it. There's a fly in this room and I'm not going to be satisfied until I catch it.
I'm so sorry.
It got me through it. I mean, I literally just like read the book cover to cover and then I'd finish it and then start again.
I've been there. I remember when I was a kid, literally it got to the point where my mom was like, stop reading Twilight.
Like, Stevie she was, with like, me now as an adult.
Because I think there was one time where I literally finished I finished Breaking Dawn, and then I just wandered into my room, grabbed the first book, and sat back down again. And my mom was like, stop it!
Like, never. Never.
I was like, well, give me something better. I don't think you can.
So until you find me a better series, this is what I'll continue reading. I don't know the.
It's like, I'm in 7th grade and I dictate my truth. So fucking get off my dick. Me to my mom when I'm 12. Okay, so anyway, the RMS Queen Mary. I almost knocked over a cup. I got too excited about the fucking boat.
And Twilight.
It is a big ass ship. It's bigger than the Titanic, and it was like built for that purpose. It is a 1,000 foot ship that is still alive and well, apparently. It is currently docked and operates as a floating hotel in Long Beach, California, and you can go stay on it.
Oh yeah, Face did it. He who shall not be named.
Talk about him. So it's a hotel. And it's a maritime museum, so you can go and learn all about, like, boats and
actually,
shit.
Actually, no, I want to talk about him for a second, but I won't say his name because I'm angry. I'm very angry, and it's, like, so, Sarah's...
Should we say his name? Because what if they they don't know who the fuck we're talking about?
So, Shane Dawson, obviously, is a not great human being for many different reasons, and we'll not get into that because that's not what this podcast is about.
Yeah, we don't do that shit.
But... I'm frustrated because it's one of the things that Sarah...
Did he do something? Like, recently?
No. Not that I'm aware of. Not anything new, at least. I mean, Stevie keeps, like, getting emails for, like, sales on his merch, and he's like, stop trying to get people to buy your merch. No one likes you anymore.
Yeah, he's like, I have a big warehouse full of it.
So. Please, someone buy it. But, like... The year anniversary of Sarah's funeral's coming up, like, next weekend. And she and I used to watch Shane Dawson videos all the time. And so here recently, I was like, I really want to go watch some old Shane Dawson videos because, like, nostalgia. And I was like, oh, wait, yeah. I can't because he's a garbage fire of a person. And it pissed me off.
You could put on, like, an ad blocker and then just, like, not give him money.
I guess that's true. He doesn't deserve my money.
Think smarter.
I also watched... TV or YouTube on my TV, so ads almost never play anyway.
Yeah, the Queen Mary. It's a hotel and a maritime museum, but at night it's like a ghost museum.
I want to go.
So I'm gonna tell you a little bit. We should actually, but I'm gonna tell you a little bit just about like the boat as a boat, not talking about ghosts for a sec, because it has like a long history, which is why there are so many fucking ghosts on board. So construction on the Queen Mary began in 1930 at the John Brown Shipyard in Clyde, Scotland. Scotland. I'm sorry if there's any Scottish people listening.
They unsubscribe immediately.
They're like, gotta go. Construction was very slow because there was like this whole Great Depression thing.
This whole Great Depression thing.
So it took 6 years to complete building, which actually seems like not that long for like a gigantic fucking boat, but maybe I don't know how long it takes to build ships. So the Queen Mary began her maiden voyage on May 27th, 1936. And for 3 years, the Queen Mary was considered like the height of luxury. She was like bitches in ball gowns, celebrities, politicians, because she was like the predominant mode of travel to go transatlantic. So from the US to the UK and back was like the trip. She was the fastest.
I thought this ship never, like, actually left port.
No, she left port a lot. She was traveling. Because she was the fastest ever ship to cross the North Atlantic with a capacity of 2,410 people.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
How many big ship? Does a cruise ship hold a lot of people?
A cruise ship? I believe so. How many people can fit on a cruise ship? Apparently, the average cruise ship fits around 3,000 people.
Oh, so, like, especially for, like, the time of the Queen Mary, that was, like, poppin', poppin'.
Yeah, and because it was, like, a luxury ship, they weren't trying to, like, get it really packed. Yeah. They were, like, rich people are on this boat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so it had, like, first class, second class, third class, like the Titanic kind of vibe. So in 1939, during World War II, luxury ocean travel was halted because there was a war happening.
Understandable.
And they basically, like, I didn't really know this, but I recently watched The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. And in that movie, Brad Pitt works on a towboat. And they, like, when World War II started, they basically were like, you own a boat? No, you don't. The military owns your boat now. And, like, all of the boats just, like, became military boats.
They said, we're commandeering this boat in the name of the military.
Yeah, so the Queen Mary became a troop ship and was renamed the Grey Ghost. So she had, like, a goth phase.
Ooh, is that why she's that's why she's haunted all the military people.
That's part of it, yeah. So ship capacity was increased to 5,500 people, and at one point it carried 16,683 people, setting the record for most people ever on a floating vessel.
That seems like too many people on a boat.
Yeah, especially when the, like, capacity before was like 2,000. Now you have 16,000 on a fucking boat. That's a lot of people.
Like, I just feel like if I were on a boat with 16,000 people,
Like, I'm dumb and don't understand physics, but I'm like, how boat keep float?
I mean, think about it in let's Disney standards at a second. So, yep. Like, if we're on the tram to go to Magic Kingdom, let's put 16,000 guests on that.
I don't want to.
We're going to end up in the bottom of the Seven Seas Lagoon real quick.
Yeah, we are. That truly is a voyage under the sea.
No one's having a happily ever after then.
Oop. So during the war, the ship carried more than 800,000 troops total, and it traveled over 600,000 miles.
How long
Not 800,000 at once. It was, some years.
What war is this?
World War II.
Oh.
The big one.
Mm. Is it bad that doesn't help me to, like, tell what years it was in?
It took place in, it started in 39, and it ended in 47.
8 years.
Yeah. So, 100,000 a year.
Ew. That's so many people.
That's a lot of people. Yeah, it was a trooper boat.
Its original capacity was 2,000.
Yes, but that's when people were, like, fancy and dancing and stuff.
I guess that's fair. Now it's like sardines. You're going off to war. Have fun.
Yeah, you are in war. And apparently, I didn't write this down, so I don't know the specific stuff, but apparently it was involved in, like, pretty much every major, like, boat incident that took place during the war.
Do you fuck with the war?
Do you fuck with the war? Queen Mary does. She was there, bitch.
Like, she was at every single fucking war.
Yeah, she... Every war.
Queen Mary said, I fuck with the war.
She also, at one point, survived a collision at sea.
Oh, fuck yeah,
and she participated in the D-Day invasion.
Oh, no. Oh, wait, that's a good thing.
Well...
Yes.
I think it's neutral. Like, we won because of D-Day. Like, she was there.
Thank you, Mary.
She's that bitch. She's there. She's ready to fucking go. So after the war ended, The ship was used to transport war brides, and I didn't know what that was. Apparently a war bride is like if there are American soldiers or soldiers of it, but specifically these ones were American soldiers who were like stationed in like other countries and then they married someone there. They were a war bride. So, which sounds like a very aggressive name when all it means is like man's from Oklahoma was stationed in France and he married a French bitch.
Okay. I was like, this sounds real gross, real fast.
Yeah.
When no, it's not like a... actuality, it's just like my great-grandfather married someone whenever he was stationed in Vietnam.
Yeah, I don't think it was like a kidnapping situation.
Okay, good. I don't know if that last statement was true or not, but it sounds correct.
Yeah. So basically, the ship was then used to, I guess a lot of people did that. I mean, it was an 8-year-long war, so I'm sure there were a lot of American soldiers who were then stationed in places in Europe who were like, I need to take my wife and my wife had a child at some point. They need to go back to home.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. They have a life here now. They've spent the last 8 years in this place.
The boat spent, like, all of 1946 transporting war brides and their children back to the U.S. and Canada from Europe.
Jesus Christ.
It completed 13 of these trips in that year and carried over 20,000 people. Not all at once, but okay, just in that year.
I mean,
they said fuck the capacity.
Less. at a time.
So in July of 1947, the war was finally over. They had transported all of their war brides and shit, and they were like, "Okay, you can stop being the Grey Ghost or the whatever the fuck its name was. You can be the Queen Mary again." So the Queen Mary was refurbished. She got a new set of paint, new coat of paint. She was like looking spicy. And she prepared to return to her former glory as a luxury cruise ship. So she resumed these, like, elegant cruises for rich people. And she was sailing between Southampton and New York weekly. So Europe to New York.
Mm-hmm.
So she did that for, like, a decade. And then in the early 1960s, though, transatlantic cruises were becoming less popular because, like, people could use planes.
Yeah.
So in 1963, the Queen Mary began sailing occasional cruises to the Canary Islands and the Bahamas, but since it was an old ship, it didn't have AC, its pools were indoor pools instead of outdoor pools, and it didn't really have, like, the amenities that people began expecting when they went on cruise ships, so it wasn't really, like, a luxury cruise anymore, it was kind of, like, old lady cruise. So in 1967, she was retired and sold for $3.45 million to the city of Long Beach, California, where she still lives now.
Wow.
So that's her life. Having been an active ship for over 30 years, there were 50 deaths reported on the boat throughout its life as a luxury cruise ship. And that's not counting any deaths that may have taken place during World War II or during the year where it was transporting the war brides.
Mm-hmm.
So, during this time, as one would expect, the RMS Queen Mary became home to many spirits, and it is considered one of the most haunted places in America, with over 150 distinct ghosts having been sighted on board, and some investigators have said that there are around 600 ghosts on board.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So I'm going to go through just, like, the big ones, the prominent ghosts that are seen and heard by a lot of people. So probably the most famous ghost on board is Jackie. And Jackie has a friend. Her name is Sarah. So the ghosts of these two young girls are often seen together on the Queen Mary. Jackie is believed to be a little girl whose name was Jacqueline Torin, who was on the boat at one point, and it is believed that she died when she was about 5 or 6 on the Queen Mary because she drowned in the second-class swimming pool.
Oh, no.
Not long after, a girl named Sarah, who was around the same age, maybe a little bit older, like 6 to 8 in the age range, also drowned in the pool in the 1940s. There's not really, like, for most of the ghosts, there's not really a specific, like, documentation of like who exactly they were. Mm-hmm. But apparently that's normal because I guess like when boats are in international waters, they like really don't give a shit about like keeping good records.
Oh, like maybe they died.
Yeah, like there's a lot of situations where like someone will be murdered or go missing on a cruise ship and like it just won't be solved because it's like, well, we don't know who the police department is because we were in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean.
I guess that's fair.
Yeah. But anyway, so the girls are often seen around. They used to have, so they had a second class swimming pool and a first class swimming pool. But now the boat only has the first class swimming pool because the area that was the second class one was refurbished and it's now a theater. But it's believed that both girls drowned in the second class swimming pool, so they would have been where the theater now is. So they are often seen haunting the theater, the first class swimming pool, and what used to be the ship's nursery. Jackie is a lot more talkative than Sarah. She can be heard laughing, calling out for her parents, splashing around in the water, and she has communicated on camera many times. Like, I recommend it. There are these like full videos of paranormal investigators just like having full-on conversations with her. And she's kind of like a little like, she's kind of like a little prankster. She likes to play peekaboo in the pool. Like people will spot her head floating just over the balcony and then she'll disappear and then you can like hear her laughing.
Mm-hmm. Fun.
Yeah. You're like, oh, great.
Exciting.
The second spirit, who's believed to be Sarah, is often with Jackie, but she is quieter, like she doesn't have conversations with people, and she is believed to be more aggressive. She doesn't typically respond to questions, and she has, like, hit guests with gusts of air before. People believe that both Sarah and Jackie were children who rode on the Queen Mary during the Warbride trips. Mm. Some other ghosts that are famous are the ghosts of Engine Room 13. So the first ghost is John Henry, who was a crewman who worked in the Engine Room 13 of the ship. It's actually very sad. He lied and said he was 18 to get the job, but he was actually only 13 years old.
No.
And while working one day, there was a fire in his engine room. And while he was trying to probably run from the fire, he was crushed to death in the engine room door, which is like the engine rooms have these big, like, metal doors that, like, how do I say this with words? Not a physical motion. Like, they're very heavy, mm-hmm. and they have the capacity to crush someone. After his death, people claimed to have seen unexplainable smoke in the engine room, as well as orbs and flashing lights. And the door to engine room 13 is apparently sometimes inexplicably hot to the touch. About a decade after John Henry died, another man died in the same way as John Henry. This was 18-year-old John Petter, who was working aboard the ship as a fireman in 1966. The door to engine room 13 was already, like, infamous at this point because it killed John Henry. And it's believed that John Petter and one of the crewmates were, playing a game of chicken with the door, basically, or, like, just goofing around mm-hmm. when it closed and crushed him to death as well. The ghost of John Petter is attributed to leaving greasy handprints around the ship. Like, sometimes people will just see, like, the imprint of a hand. And sometimes you can hear two distinct screams in engine room 13.
Oh, wonderful.
Super fun. In the 90s, there was a woman who was hired as like a new tour guide for the ship. And she was hired for the Maritime Museum. So she wasn't like doing ghost tours or anything. She didn't really have any knowledge of the ghosts of the ship. She was just talking about like boat history and like World War II and stuff like that. And she reported feeling like an eerie feeling as she walked down the hallway. And then she said as she turned a corner, she saw a man standing right in front of her. But when she blinked, he disappeared. And then despite allegedly having never even heard the John Petter ghost story before, she was able to identify his crew photo as the man that she saw.
Nope.
Yup.
I don't enjoy that a lot.
So another ghost, this one is kind of like I'm not sure about because I feel like there would be some record of this, but there's not any actual record, but allegedly in room B474, as the story goes, apparently a man in the 40s, no, the 30s, like before World War II, mm-hmm. a man murdered his wife and two children in that room before then killing himself. And people say that the oldest daughter, whose name was Dana, is often seen wandering the hall outside of that room. And they said that they've also seen her ghost in the cargo of the ship or the archive room.
Hmm.
This ghost, I know you're going to love. He's called Grumpy the Growling Ghost. And not much is known about that spirit. Nobody knows who he is or how he would have died. So he's an unknown spirit, but he growls at guests.
Hate that a lot.
He's often heard growling in the engine room or the boiler room and sometimes from under stairs in the ship.
No. No. Don't fucking growl at me. I did so, absolutely fucking nothing for you to fucking growl at me.
Fucking grumpy.
That's fuck out of here grumpy. With the fucking growling.
Because he's a grumpy ghost. He growls at people.
Fuck out of here with the fucking growling.
Maybe he's the... Oh, I just had a bad thought. I was like, maybe he's the guy who killed himself after killing his family. And that's why he's so grumpy.
You ain't got nothing to be grumpy about now, man. You did it to yourself.
That is true. So this one is horrific. You know how I said earlier that during World War II, the Queen Mary was involved in a collision?
Yeah.
So during that collision, the Queen Mary crashed into another ship. I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing this wrong, but it was the HMS Curaçao, I think. And when they got into that collision, Queen Mary was fine. She just kept on fucking trucking. But the HMS Curaçao was like slashed in half.
Oh, no.
And like sank. But at the time, it was during World War II, so there was like a big fear of U-boats.
Mm.
And it was like ship protocol that if you're involved in a collision, you can't stop to gather survivors because like the U-boats are coming. You got to go.
Mm-hmm.
So there were 300 soldiers aboard the HMS Curaçao who were left to die in the water that night. And sometimes at night, people say that they can hear banging on the outside of the boat. And many people believe that those could be the spirits of the 300 who are left, like, banging on the boat to get let in.
Hate that. Hate that a lot.
Doesn't that one just make you sad?
That's horrible. Like, I understand. Like, I mean, I get it, but don't, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make it any better.
Please stop. I mean, I think the thing with the ghosts is a lot of the times they're like stuck on a loop of their last moments, mm-hmm. and they don't really know that they're dead or like they don't know what's going on.
And they're just like, help, please. Please help. Help, please. Please help.
Yeah, which is so sad, like for eternity.
Poor dude. Someone needs to call Sarah Jessica Parker. She'll know what to do. Wait,
why Sarah Jessica Parker?
Ghost Whisperer.
It's Jennifer Love Hewitt.
That's what I meant. I knew it was another three acronyms.
Call Sarah Jessica Parker, too, though. I'm sure she can help.
She can do something. I think in my head like I wanted person. Sarah Jessica Parker to do it.
Every time I think of Sarah Jessica Parker, all I can think about is in Glee when her and Kurt do the let's have a kiki. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I hate that episode a lot.
It's so funny.
It's so bad.
No, it's awful, but I love it. I feel like it's camp.
Is that what camp is?
It could be. If you believe hard enough. So there's also some like miscellaneous ghosts that don't really have like a story, but who are seen a lot and there are lots of reports of. For example, there is a man who is often seen in a 1930s suit and like bowler hat. And people see him like outside of the first class rooms, and usually when people see him, he's accompanied with like flickering lights and faucets spontaneously just turning themselves on.
He's got to brush his teeth before dinner.
Yeah, there's also the white lady who many guests have reported seeing, like a figure of a woman in a white evening gown. She's usually seen in the first class hallway or the first class lounge. And she's usually seen either floating up and down the hallway or dancing in the lounge or sometimes playing the piano. And I kind of love her because I feel like she's just like a fucking rich bitch. She's just like on the ship living her best life.
Yeah, no, she's like, I died, but like, I'm just gonna have an eternal cruise now.
Yeah, she's like, this is my boat. You know, I wear my evening gowns, I dance, and I'm living my truth. Yeah. I hang out with the man in the bowler hat sometimes.
We flicker lights, we turn on faucets, it's a good time.
It's a fun existence.
Sometimes the kid and I play peekaboo downstairs.
Honestly, sounds fun.
Yeah. I'd love to be a ghost.
But like a fun ghost, not like one that's like eternally banging. Yeah, growling or like banging on the side of a ship. I want to be the bitch in like my fucking evening gown. I'm just dancing in the fucking lounge.
Playing a piano. Living.
Yeah. There's also a... people have seen multiple apparitions of... It's like debated if they're the same woman or different women, but they're like in vintage bathing suits by the first class pool. And sometimes people have seen like wet footprints appearing like without a person's feet attached to them going to the changing rooms. And I love that, like just eternally like just fucking swimming on my cruise.
You're gonna be so pruny. Or would you get
no pruny? Because I don't have skin.
I guess that's fair. Your skin is an illusion.
Yeah.
Can you feel the water, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, Jackie splashes, so I'm assuming yes, they can feel the water.
That's fair.
Also, the phones on board will sometimes ring in the middle of the night, but when you pick them up, nobody's there. There's an area of the boat that used to be the third class nursery, and people sometimes hear babies crying in there. And then the big scary room is room B340. And this used to be one of the third class staterooms, but it has since been updated to like a big fancy suite.
Of course.
But it is apparently a hotbed for paranormal activity.
And that's why it's the fancy room.
Yeah. The first documented complaint about ghosts in this room was in 1967. Guests will often claim to hear knocking on the door and the walls in the middle of the night. The faucets will turn themselves on. Greasy handprints will appear around the room. Lights will flicker. The temperature will suddenly drop or get really hot all of a sudden. There's weird smells. The lights will flicker. People have said that their blankets have been pulled off them in the middle of the night. And people have reported waking up to see a tall figure standing in the room or sometimes at the foot of their bed.
Nope. See, I'm okay with some of the things. Just don't touch me or my stuff. Don't let me, like, don't come near me, perhaps. Yeah.
Perhaps.
Don't, like, loom over the foot of my bed like a scary shadow figure.
Yeah.
Those are my requirements for you to ghost in front of me.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes people will hear Grumpy the growling ghost in this room as well.
You can go fuck yourself, Grumpy.
So this like room was so like this stuff, this wasn't just like an occasional little like scary moment. Like it was so often that anytime a guest stayed in that room, they were complaining, they were refunding. So like the hotel just like shut down that room. They were like, no, people aren't staying in that room anymore.
Jesus.
But then they decided, oh, wait, we can profit off of this. So now you can specifically request the haunted scary room. It is $500 a night, and it comes with a Ouija board, a crystal ball, and tarot cards. Like, when you go in, they have, like, a little, like, spooky box for you to, like, contact the dead or whatever.
Do they have instructions, or they're just, like, use them?
Go for it. Figure it out. Some people think... So this room is apparently like right next to the first class swimming pool, which a lot of ghosts hang out near that pool. Mm-hmm. So some people think that there might be like a portal or like some sort of like window to the spirit realm or something in this room. Mm-hmm. And like this room is how the ghosts travel between like the spirit world and our world or something. And like that's why this room is so haunted, because there isn't like... Yeah, like room B474 is like the room where they think people actually got murdered in. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, well, why this room? So people think like, oh, maybe it's just like a portal or something.
Mm-hmm. That'd be fun.
Yeah, that'd be a moment.
Could you jump into the portal, do you think? Or do you have to be dead? Is it like the portal in Harry Potter where, like, it's only when Sirius dies that he can fall through it?
Yeah, I think it's like that. Aww. Like, only dead people can go through.
So, like, do you think if you were to commit suicide in the pool, you'd fall through?
I don't think you can willingly enter the portal.
Oh, well, that's not fair.
I mean, maybe you can. I don't know. I've never been a ghost.
I feel like we need to figure out how to enter the portal.
And then we go.
Yeah.
And we request this room.
Yeah. And then enter the portal.
Although, in the video where he who must not be named
Voldemort?
Went there, I'm... No, Shane Dawson. I'm pretty sure they requested this room and, like, in the video nothing fucking happened. But, like, maybe that's because the ghosts are camera shy.
Or, like, I think the lights did something, like, once and it was like... You know.
Yeah, or maybe, like, the ghosts were like, y'all are annoying. Bye, we're gonna go hang out by the pool.
You fucked your cat. We don't want to scare you.
Grumpy's like, this is weird. We're leaving.
Even I don't want to growl at you.
Yeah.
Are there more ghosts?
He's like, those were all of my, like, big prominent ghosts. Yeah, but there's... Apparently, like, there was, like, little stuff that I saw, like, they were, like, oh, there's, like, a woman who's usually in the lobby, like, and if you see her, she'll, like, duck behind one of the pillars and disappear, or something like that. But, yeah, those were, like, the big, or big players that we know about. But that one dude, Peter James, mm-hmm. I think is his name, he's, like, a very famous... paranormal investigator.
Oh no, not the little boy.
He's the guy who said that there are he sensed over 600 spirits on the boat.
Jesus Christ. So, that's a lot. That's too many.
I don't know if you believe in that shit, but like if you do.
That's too many, in my personal, professional, humble opinion.
Yeah. Although I do think it's kind of fun because like I know ghosts can be scary, but in my like in my vision of the boat, I feel like it's
just a lot of old people who were just swing dancing.
I feel like it's just like a party. Like the ghosts all come there to fucking party.
Yeah.
Oh, there's also this one. This one doesn't really make sense to me. There was a guy who was a captain of the boat. He was the last captain of the boat ever. And he passed away in the 90s, like in his house, not on the boat. But he was a big like cigar smoker. And people sometimes say that when they go into the captain's quarters, they can still smell cigar smoke. So some people think like, in his afterlife, he sometimes just visits the boat, hangs out, smokes a cigar.
That's so wholesome.
Yeah.
I love that. This mm-hmm. has been a... That was a good ending story.
Yeah, I thought, like, maybe keep it a little more... I mean, obviously there's still death involved, but it's not as, like...
Not as gruesome.
Yeah. But that was a fun little comeback moment.
It
I
was.
Love this for us.
And I hope you guys enjoy it, too. We will be back to posting more semi-regularly in every other week intervals. Who knows what yes. we'll be posting at this next episode, because we don't fucking know. We'll probably figure it out, like, 2 days before we record.
But it will be spooky and or scary. We can guarantee that.
And that is a feckin'
or
promise.
About Twilight. Those are our options.
And those are... Yeah, that's honestly... Twilight's it's a good contender always.
Yeah, maybe at some point we'll do an unfiltered thoughts on Twilight Part 2.
I think that needs to come soon. I've got new ones.
Yeah. So I'm going to just like let the audience in on our... our episodes, we have three types of episodes that we do. Sometimes like this episode was both true crime and paranormal, but usually we'll do like a true crime episode, a paranormal episode, or what we like to call chaos episodes, where just, like, what the fuck are we talking about? Who knows?
And those are the kind of episodes where it's like, we talk about Twilight for an hour and a half, or just the most random of shit when we do the Disney Channel Halloween episodes. Just the random
which
shit.
Which I loved that episode.
That was a fun time. Or the unreleased episode that we did where we did the one-star movie ratings.
Oh my god, one day we need to do that again.
Yeah, we do, because we lost the footage from that, and that was a really fun time.
Yeah. So, if you would like to, you can follow us on social media. We are at the Spooky Scary Podcast, pretty much
everywhere.
Everywhere.
Stories are
Twitter,
sold.
Facebook and Instagram. I think we use Instagram the most. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to get a hold of us, that's a good place to try. And if you would like to like recommend stories for us to do, that's always fun. If you want to follow me personally, I am everywhere at Calaluna. That's Cala, C-A-L-L-A-X-L-U-N-A.
And I am IDK Chris, I guess. Spelt just how you think it would be.
So yeah, thanks for joining us on our first comeback well, second, we've had comeback many comeback episodes,
but hopefully the last comeback episode.
Yes.
Until next time.
That has been Chris.
And that has been Kath.
What do we say?
Stay spooky, y'all.
Yeah, stay spooky, y'all.
Bye.